is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, leaders. I'd like to not only welcome you to the Leadership Momentum Podcast, but I'd like to welcome you to a whole new year. Hopefully, you've recouped from all of those Christmas services. Some of you out there are just flat out crazy. Dozens of services at many locations, many of you. I can remember my craziest year was 5 or 6 years ago. I believe we had like 37-something services over 7 locations, including 2 services actually on Christmas Day. We had a 5 o'clock and a 7 o'clock, and that might be absolutely crazy to some of you, but they were jam-packed services. It was something that we had to teach, you know, set a culture for several years in a row, but it really caught on, and those ended up being some really great services. Today, we'll be talking leadership with Steve Green, the president of Hobby Lobby. And I'll also sit down with the one and only Donald Miller to let you know a little bit about an incredible opportunity that's coming up in May. Well, you may not do the shopping in your family, but I can assure you that Hobby Lobby is represented well in your home. Somehow, there's Hobby Lobby all over the place, whether you know it or not. You're likely to have Hobby Lobby decor all over your house. Well, our featured guest today has a lot to do with how those decorations got in your home. And like I said, our featured guest today is Steve Green. Green is the president of the world's largest privately owned arts and crafts retailer. That's Hobby Lobby. Steve's father founded Hobby Lobby in 1972. They did business in some humble beginnings, a 300-square-foot retail space. And those of you who have been part of a church plant know about those primitive beginnings, right? You've been there, done that. Some of you are living that out right now. Well, as you know, the chain has grown. It's grown to more than 600 stores. And now it's over 30,000 employees. And check this out. All while being an outspoken believer, right? It's possible, my friends. And God is definitely blessing him for that. And you can see just by that little snapshot of what he's accomplished, that is exactly why I want us to hear from him as we start off the new year. In addition to all that, Green has authored his first book, Faith in America, in 2011. His latest book, The Bible in America, it explores the history and impact of the Bible on U.S. history and in today's modern world. A great read. I definitely suggest you pick it up. But not only is he an author, but Steve Green serves as chairman of the board of Museum of the Bible and is the visionary leader in establishing one of the world's largest private collections of rare biblical artifacts. In his role as chairman, Green has assembled a team of not only academics, but also designers and technology professionals and other experts to create the 430,000-square-foot Museum of the Bible. And it's scheduled to open this year in Washington, D.C., 3 blocks from the U.S. Capitol. And Steve Green drops the mic when it comes to leadership. And I'm hoping there are a few things in this conversation that either affirm something that you're currently doing or challenge you as you seek to maximize your influence for God's glory. Enjoy. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast. Appreciate you.
You bet. I appreciate you having me on, Chris.
Yeah, so of course we can go a lot of different directions with such an accomplished leader like you, Steve, but I wanted to start off with let's just call it out. I mean, you're the president of Hobby Lobby. I mean, the world's largest privately owned arts and crafts retailer. More than 700 stores, 47 states, 30,000 employees. I think a lot of the leaders that are listening in are probably sweating right now. $3.6 billion in annual sales. I got to ask you, I know everyone's wondering, how do you spend your week? I mean, what is the most important? Long term, you got short term, you got in the business versus on the business, putting out fires, team building, you got acquisitions. How do you spend your week? How do you decide?
Well, there's not a standard answer there. There are times that of the month where there's certain meetings in place to review with leadership within Hobby Lobby, and then there's daily things that come up where people call and they've got questions that we deal with, and so it's hard to say what is a normal day because there isn't one, but normally more of a month, certain meetings that we have, and you come in and you never know what you're going to be dealing with that day.
Well, hopefully that's encouraging to those listening in that you can't just cookie cutter this thing. That
yeah.
There are issues that pop up in every industry. And if you feel like you can absolutely micromanage your week in, week out, week in, week out, you just can't. So I love that answer. So things have obviously changed since you were this 300 square foot retail space back in the day. What's been the key to leading through all the changes to where you're at now?
Well, I think you just have to, you're constantly growing and expanding. You're always learning. You're always striving, never arriving. And just growing a step at a time, as you grow incrementally, you just continue to learn and improve. Just somebody walked out of my office and I was telling them that, you know, we've put in 700 stores, but we're constantly striving to find out how can we do it better. And as you just grow incrementally and are constantly learning and improving, we just continue to grow and we do some things new, and we think that that may be a better idea, and it doesn't work out. We say, nope, that didn't work. Let's back up and let's try something else. So always striving to do better.
Well, I'm sure there's during all those changes throughout the years, there's always been one or two people at the decision-making table that have been a little bit more tentative to change. There's people that are a little bit more resistant to change. Do you have any advice for dealing with those folks?
Early in our business, I would say that might have been my mom, who was not as adventurous as my dad. But Dad has always taught us is that, you know, we try to bring people along. We try to make decisions typically in a fairly small group, not large committees. And the goal is to try to bring along everybody so that they see that this is the right direction to go, that they you explain here's why this would be the good idea, and you hopefully have everybody on the same page, and nobody is a dictator saying this is what we're doing and do it. There may be a time for that, but the more the decision makers, those that are the right ones for whatever the decision might be, you know, discuss, and everybody has their ideas and throw that out, and eventually, hopefully, the right decision comes to the forefront, and that's the direction you go, and you do it through agreement.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that had to have changed throughout the years is the way you communicate with everybody. Any top advice on how you communicate, not only tactically, but vision and heart in these complex organizations? There's church leaders listening in, and even ministries. These complex organizations, what's the best way to communicate when you can't get everybody in the room?
Yeah, there's, early on, communication was not as strong, and over time you just develop processes. We have the monthly meeting for leadership to get together, and it's a one time a month, you know, that everybody's there and can discuss what's going on. We have other meetings with larger groups of the leadership within the organization. Then there's newsletters that go out. We have regular information that goes out into the organization in our stores. There's a communication method depending on what it is. If it's a specific, it goes to specific people and departments within a store, the management within the store, or some general information for all employees that goes out in a newsletter. So each of those has been developed over time as you see a need and you want to bring people up to speed. We do that. Co-managers, new co-managers, we bring them in for a couple of days and show them around the organization and have different leadership explain here's who and what Hobby Lobby is. So that hopefully they have a better understanding of this new culture that they're coming into. So there's a variety of different methods and opportunities for us to communicate to our employees. And each of them has just been developed over time, one step at a time.
Yeah, that's good to hear, one step at a time too, for leaders, is we're trying to have these robust communication systems overnight. And like you said, it takes time. So like, take us back to when you were handed the keys back in the day, I guess maybe 10, 12 years now. Take us to the first 6 months, this first year maybe. What should leaders listening in copy what you did, and what should they avoid?
My dad is still involved, and we still work together as a team. It's just been over the years, roles that I have continued to take on, new responsibilities that I would add, and others that would have been handed off as you know, I'm adjusting the responsibility on my plate. And so it's just been a continual learning process. I graduated high school and started working in the business and have been working ever since. And so just continue to learn and try to understand, you know, every facet of the business and, handing off responsibilities, taking on new responsibilities. But there's never been a time when it's just been this major, here's a major move and adjustment. We are constantly looking forward. What does the future look like? What does succession look like? And constantly understanding that there needs to be plans in place to understand that as time goes, that there's going to have people in place ready to take on that role as it goes forward. So we have what we refer to as Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3. We even are having some Gen 4s, and my parents' great-grandkids that are my kids are having. And so we just constantly have to have and discuss on a regular basis, what does succession look like, and do that incrementally without having major adjustments within the organization.
Yeah, I hear there a lot of humility, and the gradual aspect is really important.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have an incredible culture there at Hobby Lobby, and that's just from the outside looking in and, of course, the reputation. But what is your favorite aspect of your culture, and how was it intentionally developed?
Well, I think that the very first statement within our statement of purpose, which says that we operate our business according to biblical principles, to me, that is really key for our family. Our family was raised in a Christian home. My parents were raised in Christian homes. My dad was a preacher's kid. So knowing that we want to operate this business according to those principles, to some degree, really answers a lot of questions. Here's what we do. Here's what we don't do. And there's no need to ask, because if it is it would violate a biblical principle, the answer is, no, we're not going to do that. And so having that as a foundation for our company, I think, is a great relief to some degree that some decisions that may be challenging aren't, because we know the answer. That being very core and part of that is a concept that my father has learned back in the 80s when he thought he was going to lose the business, and continues to teach the family, is that this business is not ours. We are stewards of it. It has been entrusted to us by God, and our responsibility and role is to operate it according to the guidelines He's given us. So, again, when that is the core, it helps make decisions.
Yeah, well, I love 1 Corinthians 4:2. It says, those who have been entrusted to be managers must prove faithful. And that's that whole stewardship principle. And I love that you guys look at the business that way.
Tim.
So here's the cult, you just referenced really the umbrella of the culture within the staff and within the operations. How do you see that trickling down to the shopper's experience? What's your vision for a shopper walks in, spends 17 minutes in your store? What do you want them to experience?
Well, one, we want them to experience excellence. We want them to see that they're getting a good value for what they're buying. We want them to be treated well. These are all what we takeaways that we get from God's word, that we should do the whatever we do as if we're doing it unto the Lord. Work diligently, and so treat others as we would want them to treat us. So that is the experience that we want. Now, we've never been able to do that perfectly. We're constantly striving to do that. Always have work to do, but that's what we want to do within our stores. That a customer is going to have a pleasant experience and be excited about the value of what they have bought. Of course, we want to do it in a good atmosphere. We have Christian music that plays in our stores, and obviously we're closed on Sundays, and we think that helps let people know what our position is on our faith.
Yeah, well, that's huge. I saw a tweet recently from a very respectable source that said, the vocation of pastor has been replaced by the strategies of religious entrepreneurs with business plans. I want to make a little bit of a pivot here from you're in the marketplace, but those who are listening in are running a nonprofit and they are trying to implement these things that we admire in the marketplace. And we're trying to take these great, great characteristics of a godly retail store, or it could be any kind of business, into the church world. And I was kind of offended by this tweet by a very respectable source that I love, you know, most of the stuff that comes out. But this one bothered me because it was kind of a dig. And I retweeted it and I very carefully said, I'm proud of many godly pastor friends of mine using elite organizational skills to actually pastor more people than they could alone by using these great leadership principles, you know. Any thoughts on that tension for a pastor or a church leader listening in right now? This idea of becoming too businessy and or maybe not leveraging business skills enough in the church, because like you said, we're called to be managers of the local church, so those who are pastors, and we're supposed to do that with excellence, you said. So tell me your thoughts on that tension.
Yeah, I think that there's a balance in both of those concepts. There is a different role for a church as there is in a business, but that doesn't mean that a church can't benefit from the business skill set and organizational skill set that a business-minded person may be required to have. And a business person very well can learn from a pastoral mindset that they're taking care of their employees as opposed to seeing their employees as an asset. So I think both can learn from the other. They do have unique and separate roles, so we don't ignore that. The church isn't a business, and the business isn't a church, but there are skill sets that we can each learn from the other, and we ought to do that. And we could get we could go too far one way or the other, but organizational skills, the mindset of excellence and providing a good product, a pastor needs to have this mindset. I want to provide my church with the best message that I can provide. I want to hear from God, and I want to present it well and with excellence and make it where it's understandable. And so that mindset that is in the business world, they can benefit from. But there's limits because there are differences. And so knowing those differences but learning from each other, I think, is there's a great value in being able to do that.
Yeah, what I hear there is it really is a matter of the heart, what your motive is. And folks, don't be confused. Yes, we talk business strategy on here with folks like Steve Green and Seth Godin and Patrick Lencioni and Henry Cloud and Donald Miller. They're not necessarily church leaders, but the heart is that it would not take away from the same heart. We don't want to take away from the heart of a pastor, but actually that it would help your ministry as you can pastor more people as a result. So that's the heartbeat behind it. Again, it goes back to the heart. Now, speaking of heart, you're obviously living out your faith in the marketplace. You're making a huge difference in the world, making very public stances against political and social pressures, being known for outrageous generosity, even playing the faith-based music in the store, and then building a Bible museum in the country's capital. Although you're not technically in full-time ministry, what do church leaders need to be telling their church attendees about the importance of their role in the kingdom out there in the marketplace? What do some of the marketplace influencers need to hear?
Well, I can remember, as I graduated from high school, went into the businesses and working. I can remember thinking, okay, well, that's my day job, and I would go to church and teach a Sunday school class or run a soundboard or something like that. And that was kind of a ministry outlet as I saw it at that time. But knowing that as we operate our business, we are wanting to be an example and a light within our world by operating according to the biblical principles. But I did not see it as much directly as indirect ministry until a ministry side of the business really started growing and our giving started increasing and our newspaper ads and the music in the stores and chaplains that we have for our employees and the different ministry side of the business really kind of started growing, that I really kind of the light bulb went off for me that this is my ministry. And I think that while some of that came on because of what we're able to do directly, I think what we have to realize is that God calls us into whatever profession we're in, and God can use us there. And we need to, as Scripture says, do whatever we do as unto the Lord, as if this is my ministry, this is my calling. My father really struggled with that early on, because as a preacher's kid, his parents thought that if you're going to do something for God, it's going to be either on the mission field or behind a pulpit. And as a result, all of his siblings went into ministry. He's the only one that didn't, and he really felt like the black sheep for quite a while. The question he would ask himself is, am I not good enough? Until God answered through his giving, a direct answer to prayer, and that really helped Dad realize that God was telling him, I've got you right where I want you, and I have a purpose for your life. And I think it's important for both the church and those outside the church to realize that God can use us wherever we're planted, and we're supposed to do what we do and be a light for him wherever we are.
That's such a good word. I think all the pastors that are listening in or wish they could take you to their donor dinners and take you to. That's just a good word for all of us to hear. One of the ministry efforts that you're directly involved in right now is the Museum of the Bible. You've assembled a team of academics, and you've got designers involved and technology professionals, all these experts to create this is ridiculous, y'all, 430,000 square feet of the Museum of the Bible, dedicated not only to this scholarly presentation, but also a very engaging presentation, which very rarely is there a good combination of those two, of the Bible's impact, history, and the narrative. And it's scheduled to open this year in Washington, D.C., 3 blocks from the U.S. Capitol. Ridiculous. And I know I was speaking at an event with Dave Ramsey, about 6 to 8 months ago, and we saw, some of the construction and stuff, and it was really cool. Of course, we're excited about this as a church leadership community. Just jacked about it. Tell us your why. I think, of course, we know the why overall, but your personal why behind it, your passion for it, and how can we get more involved as church leaders, no matter where we live, whether we live in D.C., whether we live domestically here or abroad, how can we get involved?
Well, I think that I was raised in a home that was built on biblical principles that use this Bible as a guide for our lives. We operate a business that is built on the principles. I'm fortunate to live in a country that was founded on principles that our founders found in this book. The idea that all men are created equal, that is a biblical concept. That's where our founders got that and have been a benefit of that. So the principles of this book have been a tremendous blessing for me and my family, our business, and our nation. And we want to just put a bright light on that book and say, hey, here is a book that has impacted our world, and we think you ought to know about it. We were looking in Dallas originally, and we opened it up to New York City and D.C. when I looked at the top 10 metros. And we did a survey, and it showed that it would be best attended in Washington, D.C., which just makes sense because that's the heart of museums in our country. And so that's about 18 months later, the facility that we are in the process of renovating today came available and should open a year from now. And the way that anybody can get involved, one is by obviously telling their friends about it. We would love to see millions of people coming to the museum every year to be inspired about this book. And then On a very practical level, we have what's called a million name wall. I am convinced that there's at least a million people in our nation or around the world that would want to be a part of putting a bright light on this book. And for any donation that somebody gives, we will put their name on this million name wall. And I think that in itself is a story for a visitor who just assumes that this Bible's dead and gone to realize that there was a million people that were involved in making this museum happen. So helping get word out, praying for this endeavor, those are some of the ways that anybody can be a part of.
That's great. So what's the best way to give?
Going online, museumofthebible.org, and right there on our website, you obviously can learn. We got lots of videos and a lot of things that they can learn about, and the opportunity to give is right there online.
These are the kind of things that we've prayed about. For the Bible to have this much influence right there in the Capitol, we've prayed about it for decades and decades and decades, and here it's happening. So just from the church leadership, you know, community, I just want to give you a big thank you on behalf of all of us for having the vision for it, being willing to do it, having the business acumen to even be able to do it, and then just for serving us so well in 47 states there at Hobby Lobby.
Well, we appreciate it. And this venture truly feels like it's really just something that God's doing, and we get to be a part of it, because as it becomes clear to us time and time again, we're not smart enough to have figured all this out. But God has just brought the right team and has opened the doors, closed doors in this process. The building itself that we were able to acquire, a building that close to the mall, hasn't come up for sale since we acquired that. And just time and time again, we can see God going before us. This is really His doings.
Yeah, well, you keep saying that it's nothing about you, you're not real bright, whatever. I've been to the museumofthebible.org and seen your board. You guys have got a slate full of brilliant people working on this, and it's pretty cool to see it all happening. We really appreciate your time.
You bet. It's my pleasure. I appreciate you having me. Thank you, Chris.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Steve Green. We covered a variety of topics, from creating culture to navigating change to communication, organizational values, and some other things as well. I challenge you, sit down with your team or maybe with a couple of other ministries and brainstorm, how can you grow? Or what can you tweak? Something you're doing now, how can we improve based on what we've heard? And my prayer is that this allows you to operate more effectively. And ultimately, those coming in the church doors are served with even more excellence as a result. Switching gears a little bit here, it's that time again, and Dave Ramsey and I will be hosting our third stewardship conference this May. And of course, we can't just do it, like we did last year. You can't just do it the same. It's like Christmas services, right? We have to take it to another level. We capped the first one a couple years ago at 250 executive level leaders and held it at the conference center here at Ramsey headquarters. That event sold out, and of course, it had a fantastic lineup. Last year, we upped the ante by capping it at 500 executive level leaders and held it offsite at a great hotel ballroom. And this year, we're taking it to yet another level. I'm excited to invite you to the Stewardship Conference on May 2nd through the 4th right here in Nashville. I'll be joined by several world-class speakers, including Dave Ramsey, of course. Also, Louis Giglio will be joining, Donald Miller, Christy Wright, and many more. Also, playing music, Mac Powell of Third Day and All Sons and Daughters. It's going to be amazing. If you're a church leader, if you're a senior pastor, an executive pastor, maybe you're a small group pastor or a stewardship pastor, we'd love to spend 2.5 fun and exciting days investing in you and providing practical insights that you can actually apply in your ministry. Not just theory, but actual things that you can apply in your ministry. You don't want to miss it. So to get us ready for the conference, I actually caught up with the one and only Donald Miller. And we talked a little bit about the stewardship conference specifically. Hello, everyone. This is Chris Brown. I'm here sitting next to Donald Miller. He's a New York Times bestselling author. Many of you are familiar with his works. He's also a movie co-writer. He's a husband, and he is a story brand genius. He's going to be joining us for the 2017 Stewardship Conference right here in Nashville, and I wanted you to get a sneak peek into some of the material he's going to be covering. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Now, what excites you the most about the Stewardship Conference?
I love the fact that I get to talk to a bunch of people who have to communicate for a living, because it makes me feel less alone, right? Yeah. We have to get these ideas out there. So I'll be coming at it from a perspective of having studied story for a long time and becoming fascinated with 2,000 years of best practices on how to get people's attention, how to captivate a human brain. So we've developed a framework that we've taken a bunch of businesses through on how to clarify their message and get people to pay attention. Mm-hmm. So the fact that there'll be all these folks in the audience who have to get people's attention every week, I think there's going to be some kindred spirit there. So I'm hoping to bring some tools that really help them do that.
Yeah, well, you right now, you consult with pastors and you consult with executive teams all over the country.
Yeah.
When it comes to the story branding topic, what are you finding? What excites you the most about that?
Well, again, you know, the elements of story have been in place for a very long time, 2,000 years. And the average brain spends about 30% of its time daydreaming. Now, if I'm actually preaching in your pulpit, it's probably going to be about 60% of the time. But the average one will be 30%.
Yeah.
And what neuroscientists have found is that when we are engaged in a story, whether we're reading a book or watching a movie, the brain stops daydreaming. Mm-hmm. And the story basically, I don't know how else to say it, but it sort of hijacks the brain. It does the daydreaming for you. I'm wondering, what if a communicator could get up behind the pulpit and communicate in such a way that from the very first word that they say to the very last word that they say, nobody in that room daydreamed. Is that even possible? It is possible if we understand 2,000 years of best practices. The trick is leaving most of the things that you would normally say out and continuing a narrative thread through that sermon. That's the goal. When I get up and talk at the Stewardship Conference, I'm going to talk about how to do that. And we're going to see if it works. But it's worked for so many 2,000 companies that we've consulted with. I can't tell you how many have increased their revenue because they were able to get attention from customers that they previously couldn't get. The other thing I'm excited about is everybody in the room has this amazing cause that I believe in.
Yeah.
So if we teach the good people, the right people, to communicate well, you give the good people and the right people the microphone, you can really change a culture. So that's what I'm in it for.
That's great. So this obviously can apply to writing sermons, which is very convicting for me. And of course, you speak too all the time. So it's probably you apply this to yourself as well.
Yeah.
But small group curriculum, what about the whole entire story that the church is building? This really applies to anything, right?
Any form of communication. I mean, if you have a building campaign, any form of communication, you want to filter it through this process. I actually did it. I created the process. I'd written a bunch of books, but I created the process while I was writing my latest book. And I just used this 7-part formula in every chapter over and over. And I literally looked at that book and thought, this is so formulaic, people are going to smell it out.
Yeah.
Nobody did. And I would say, you know, if I've sold millions of books, I've probably had 10 people come to me and say they read it in one sitting. And this last book, which is just as long as all the others, I think I had about 500 people in the first year say that.
Wow.
Because it's different.
Yeah.
It's easy to engage. It's easy to access. I know where the story is going, and I wonder how it's going to end up. Those are the questions that we want people asking when they're sitting in the pulpit or when they're sitting in the pew watching us from the pulpit. We want them saying, where's this going? How's this going to end up? There are big stakes here. And they don't have time to daydream because they're trying to figure out how you're going to wrap up the story. And so we'll explore those tools.
That's great. Now, the Stewardship Conference is all about stewardship, and it's also about leadership and how they kind of integrate together. Donald Miller, you see a lot of leadership out there.
Yeah.
What kind of leader do you follow? What makes a great leader?
Well, there's a bunch of great leadership qualities. I like people. I tend to follow people who are not just goal-oriented, and I'm a huge fan of setting goals and reviewing them every day, but they are mission-oriented. There's something deeper than just a goal. There's a cause that they're trying to bring about in the world. And I don't care if they're a pastor or a business leader, those people stand out. When it's, you know, Jim Collins talks about this in Good to Great.
Yeah.
When something has captured your heart and you're trying to make the world a better place, you become a mission-oriented person. Those are the sort of leaders that I'm drawn to. Mm-hmm. Leaders who are not in it for themselves or they're over themselves. You know, I had a great interview, Chris, with Pete Carroll. I'm a huge Seattle Seahawks fan. So the fact that I got time with Pete Carroll one-on-one in his office
was amazing.
Is this
before the decision or after the decision?
It was the year they actually drafted Russell Wilson. So they had not won a Super Bowl.
Gotcha.
And it was, I think it was second year with Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I said, listen, you know, I really was interviewing about his nonprofit work with a better LA and a better Seattle stopping gang violence.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Times credited Pete Carroll with the reduction of gang violence in Los Angeles. Can you believe that?
That's legit.
It's what he does on the side.
Yeah.
And I said, man, how did you get so interested in other people? Mm-hmm. You know, how did you become sort of this missional person? He's not a believer.
Yeah.
And he said something really fascinating to me. He said, Don, here's the deal. I succeeded a lot in high school. I mean, he's a cocky guy. I succeeded a lot in high school. And after a while, winning just didn't do it for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And when I discovered I could help other people win, a light bulb came on, and I felt like I had a reason to get out of bed in the morning.
That's good.
That's the sort of paradigm shift that we want to explore when we're talking about being communicators. And the type of leaders that I follow, that's the type of leader.
Yeah, when I think about leadership and how important clarity is, that's a real important thing for you as well, the clarity piece.
Yeah.
What does a leader do to create absolute amazing clarity in organization?
You know, it's interesting. We're in the middle of a political season. By the time people watch this, who knows what's going to happen? But yeah. I'm watching all these folks running for president. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing the ones that have a very clear vision for what they want to accomplish, mm-hmm. have defined a villain or some challenges that we have to overcome in order to accomplish that vision, have given the people a vision of what a climactic scene looks like, what America will look like if we elect them. Those are the contenders who are winning in the polls, right? If we walk up as a leader and we communicate out of a junk drawer of ideas, we're going to fail. People aren't going to follow us. So, you know, I don't know what happens. You guys know what happens in the future. I don't. But Jeb Bush communicated on an eighth grade level, and Donald Trump communicated on a fourth grade level, and Donald Trump kicked Jeb Bush's pants.
Yeah.
I personally think Jeb should have been president instead of maybe Trump, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
People are drawn to clarity. They are drawn to clarity. The human brain, here's two things the human brain is trying to do. Mm-hmm. The first thing it's trying to do is survive. That's the task of the human brain. Every day you wake up and your brain's going, we got to stay alive. Mm-hmm. That means food, water, shelter, relationships, all sorts of things that mm-hmm. encompass staying alive. The second thing the brain is trying to do is try not to burn very many calories, because your brain has to burn calories to think, and it burns a lot of them. That's why at the end of a day, speaking or communicating or tonight you'll go home, you're tired.
Yeah.
You're like, what did I do? I just talked all day. Well, you burned a lot of calories doing it. So if you have to burn too many calories to understand where somebody is going, mm-hmm. God has designed your brain to tune them out, because they are now a risk to your survival.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if I have to burn so many calories to figure out where you want to take me as a leader that you're starting to confuse me, my brain will say, let's not follow this guy because the barbarians may come over the hill and we got to save enough calories to kill him.
Yeah.
Right? And so people are repulsed by confusion, if you will, and they're drawn to clarity. We have to communicate clearly.
Mm, that's so good. Well, we're super excited about, I want you to stop there. Don't give away too much of your brilliance, but we really appreciate you being with us today and excited about your role at the Stewardship Conference.
My pleasure. Thanks. I can't wait.
So, church leaders, you can hear more from Donald Miller, Dave Ramsey, and myself this May at the Stewardship Conference, and discover what's possible for your ministry when it's running, like fully running on all cylinders. Here's how you find out more. This is exclusively for Leadership Momentum Podcast listeners. Visit stewardshipcentral.org and use the promo code LEADERSPECIAL. Leader Special, no spaces, to get your tickets for only $89 through January 31st. So this month only, through January 31st. The regular price is $279. So make sure you grab your tickets today for that special pricing. All right, that was the big announcement. Okay, our team has been working hard, y'all. You're really, really going to love it. All right, well, I hope you've enjoyed this January edition of the Leadership Momentum Podcast. Again, don't forget to check out the Stewardship Conference at stewardshipcentral.org. God bless y'all.
Thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. If you're looking for more details on the Stewardship Conference in May, or would like to learn how other leaders are reclaiming biblical stewardship, head over to stewardshipcentral.org. Loved what you heard today and didn't want to miss another episode? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, share your feedback by leaving a review. Finally, stay up to date with Chris Brown, including his daily radio show and podcast, Chris Brown's True Stewardship, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by following at Chris Brown on air. On behalf of your host, Chris Brown, and the team at Ramsey Solutions, thanks for joining us here at the Leadership Momentum Podcast.